Welcome to the Grit.org podcast with Colby Harris and Brian Harbin. In these episodes, they speak to top achievers in athletics and business to understand the habits and mindset they apply in order to build more grit.
Welcome back to the Grit.org podcast. My name is Colby Harris. Alongside me is Brian Harbin, and we're here today with Un Cho. Un, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm excited to have a conversation with you guys.
Absolutely. I had the pleasure last night and over the last week or so to listen to some other podcasts you've done, do some research. So Un is a serial entrepreneur from attending prestigious universities like Jacksonville University and Columbia University, spending time in New York, working on Wall Street in finance, to then coming back to Jacksonville and launching his company Haymaker, as well as a consulting firm and a number of other ventures. So today we're going to talk about his life story, what his company is rooted in, and really how he's created this success for himself and just the key tactics behind it. So again, super excited to do this today. We've had a chance to meet briefly over the last year or so just around Jacksonville, you know, biggest city, small town ever though. So tell us about your early age and coming to the U.S. You're originally from South Korea, correct?
That's correct.
So go ahead and just dive into that. Tell us a little bit about coming here, what drew that up, and then what that first step was like for you.
Yeah, so I was born in South Korea. We're a family of four. I have a younger brother. We grew up in Seoul, South Korea. You know, during that time, it's not what Korea looks like right now, but it was in a growing stage. So there were people that were just transitioning out of poverty into having normal lives and so on. And, you know, we didn't have much as a family back then. And so my parents always looked at the U.S., America, as a place of opportunity. So there was a situation, or there was a avenue for us to come to the U.S. And my parents were like, hey, look, I don't know how much better we can have being in Korea. So why don't we just sell whatever we have, pack it up, and go to U.S.? So when my brother and I were in, I think we were probably like 6 or 7 years old, and he's 2 years younger than me, we moved to Jacksonville, Florida. Didn't speak the language, didn't have much money. And my dad and I and our parents and I, we ended up in this neighborhood, pretty rough. And my dad's first job was pumping gas at my uncle's gas station. My mom worked in downtown, washing dishes, and she rode the bus for an hour. And, you know, that's how we grew up. So my brother and I went to school without speaking English. We were made fun of because we couldn't understand. And this is going to be a really important part of why we do things. And we had this one teacher that gave us a chance, gave us encouragement and so on. And we started to blossom there. And we worked really hard, was the first one to go to college. Started out at JU, got my physics degree there, then ended up at Columbia getting my engineering degree, got a job on Wall Street and worked there for about 15 years, 15, 20 years. And then came back to Jacksonville to start our businesses. So, we're back home. I have a family of, I have my wife, I have two kids, and just been really happy to be here.
Mm. Yeah, Jacksonville is the hometown then for you. It's a place that you know like no other then.
Yeah, it was weird. Living in New York, I always felt like I was from Jacksonville, but I realized at some point I lived in New York City longer than I lived in Jacksonville because we immigrated to Jacksonville. But it always felt like home. Whenever I took a flight from New York to go to Jacksonville to see my parents, I felt like it was coming home. So now being home and also raising my kids and having my wife here who's not from Jacksonville, it's good to show them where I grew up, what the grandparents are doing, and so on. So it's been great to be back.
And one thing I wanted to ask you about is those early stages, right? You know, you saw your parents working hard and, you know, making the sacrifices they had to make. You had your brother alongside you as well. I have two older brothers, so I can resonate with that. Tell me a little bit more about some of those principles and values you learned from an early age in that process that really helped shape who you became over those formative years.
Couple of things that was really, I look back and it really resonates with me and it's kind of like shaped me as a person was that we didn't know anything else than working hard. Just like, you know, my parents were my dad worked 12 hours a day pumping gas. I mean, like it's probably the, it helped him buy a gas station one day, but just if you could just imagine how hard he had to work to save up to buy a gas station. Mom riding a bus from west side of town to downtown, an hour one way, an hour back, and then washing dishes. I mean, just you watch this even as a little kid when you don't have enough awareness, you just pick up on things like hard work is the way to go. And if you just do these things the right way and you have those set in mind, there are a lot of things you can accomplish, especially when you're an immigrant that can't speak the language and didn't have many resources. And being in the position right now to be in front of you good folks, to be on a podcast, it just tells you that there's still that American dream available. If you work really hard, some breaks has to happen, but it does happen. Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting too. There's something about that first generation coming in and seeing that firsthand of just, doing whatever you have to do and your parents doing that just to give you guys a great opportunity. And, kind of the one of the challenges we have is like, okay, how do we instill that in our own kids, right? And make sure that that doesn't get lost in translation. And I wanted to ask too, like growing up, I mean, were there any, you mentioned hard work. I mean, was your job pretty much, hey, do really, really well in school? Or did you have other jobs that you started to kind of develop that own, work ethic in yourself? Or
yeah, in the Asian culture, doing well in school is just, it's a priority. It's something that you just have to do. And the parents will make sure there are resources available to make that happen or support. The situation that my brother and I were in, we couldn't speak the language, so we couldn't even understand what the teacher was telling us. So we didn't know what how to learn the curriculum at school, like how to even have conversations. So we always felt like there was something wrong with us. And, like if you look at the grades prior to my fourth grade teacher, which coincidentally was also my brother's fourth grade teacher, it was terrible, like except for math, because math was kind of easy to understand. So yeah, those were things where I think it was there watching my parents, the values comes in us. But yeah, we just worked really hard, and then you just had to have some of these mentors along the way to give you some guidance. Like, hey, by the way, it's not you that you're the problem for not understanding this. It's that we haven't communicated to you the right way, and that's when light bulbs come off. And I could talk to you later about like what happened in high school, what happened in college, and what happened during my finance career, that I had to have these people in place or these people who wanted to give their time to mentor me along the way to get to the position I am in right now. But hard work and just watching my parents is what got us there.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. And mentors definitely play a huge part in helping shape that. I was curious too. So, okay, time with at JU, Columbia, and then even on Wall Street, like where did the interest in entrepreneurship come along? Or tell us about kind of your journey into interest in
Your own business. The entrepreneurship, the journey there, it started with my parents because, as I mentioned, they had to pump a lot of gas, wash a lot of dishes to end up buying their own gas station. So they owned a gas station in a neighborhood that wasn't that big, two-pump gas station. And, my brother and I worked the weekend. So we just watched them how to operate a business. Operating a business in a challenging environment, not being able to speak well, and dealing with customers who were somewhat frustrated because we couldn't communicate the things that we wanted to communicate. And so watching my parents do that, watching without proper education, watching them doing without the basic things that people need to operate a business, it really instilled in us like a couple things, how to make things work, how to communicate in challenging environments, and also just understand how businesses work. And so that's when we really learned how to become entrepreneurs, I think. So, and there's a funny story where even at grade school, my brother would take the candy from our gas station, would sell it at school because he wanted to make extra income. So, and his entrepreneur journey started really early with that too.
Stealing candy, selling it on the side.
Yeah, taking candy from our gas station and selling it at school. That's what he did.
That's like, going in the garage and finding anything you can, putting on Facebook Marketplace.
That's right.
To make extra buck.
Yeah.
I sold a thing or two that wasn't mine over the years. Yeah. That's for sure. I want to ask you about your education. So obviously, like you mentioned, it's really the, I would say the pinnacle for a parent to see their kid go to college, especially in your culture, in that situation, being first generation immigrants. Tell me more about that decision to go to school in retrospect, what that process was like for you and really some of your key takeaways from going to university.
Yeah. So, again, because my parents didn't attend university, we hear about like colleges, we heard about like university, but we didn't know that was there were SATs or ACTs. We didn't really understand what it means by getting good GPA. So, you know, middle school, we did well. I did well, but it wasn't like great. I didn't have great grades. And it wasn't until high school, my freshman year, we had a family friend like, hey, by the way, you know, you need to make these certain grades to get to these great schools. I'm like, what? Really? Didn't know that. And then you have to score well on these tests. You have to do extracurricular activities. So it wasn't until I heard it in freshman year and then into sophomore and junior year, I started to really get things in gear. So that's when college was really told to me. But also, I had to navigate through high school. I didn't know anything about high school either. Like, I didn't know that you can play for sports. I didn't realize you can go be in the marching band. All of these things were just totally new experience, and we had to learn all of those things firsthand experience. You know, I decided to go to JU. I got accepted to go to other schools when I graduated from high school. Ended up staying in Jacksonville because my parents bought another gas station and my brother was still going through his high school. Again, that experience I went through, not understanding what are the things I need to do to get to a great college, I had to stay here and help my brother out. So I ended up going to JU for 3 years. They had a program back then, so a dual degree program. Do 3 years in Jacksonville, then you can go to 2 years at another university. You know, I could choose from University of Miami, Washington University, Georgia Tech, Columbia, and decided to end up going to Columbia because I just liked the vibe up there and loved the fact that it was so different from Jacksonville. So ended up going there.
Mm. And thinking about going through college, because it's obviously a huge debate now and what you kind of take from college outside of, you know, being drawn to it because of your parents, because of the education, the path that you're already on. Now in entrepreneurship, what do you think college really served for you and your future experiences and endeavors?
So I have really great relationships with the universities, but, you know, they may not want to hear this. You know, when I worked in Wall Street, it was very important to work at prestigious, attend prestigious universities. Target schools, because, you know, you're basically, when you're on Wall Street, you're selling your resume. Like, so when I was a portfolio manager, speaking with pension funds, speaking with clients to sell our mutual funds for them to invest with us, you know, like, does he check all these boxes? Did he go to a really prestigious university? Is he, you know, is he part of all of these organizations that you're supposed to be part of as a finance person? Are you doing all of the right things? So you have to check all these boxes. And going to Columbia, going to Jackson University really helped in that process. Now, being an entrepreneur, I can tell you, do people ask me where I went to school? No, they don't care. Do they care that I studied physics? No. Do they care I studied engineering? No. But do I know how to run a business? That's what they care about. Do I try to find a way we can work with each other? The partnership? That's what they care about. And do they care? Do they know that I'm a good person or not a good person to work with? So I think if you work for larger corporations, the degree matters. I mean, yeah, I learned a lot of stuff in college. Now, if you're an entrepreneur, do you need to go to college to learn that stuff? I don't think so. But the experience I gained from going to college and then working in Wall Street and doing a lot of different things and meeting different people, that is what I'm using right now to run my businesses. So, yeah, maybe if I didn't go to college, I wouldn't have those experiences and maybe I wouldn't be able to be in this position right now with the business. So I think some part of it I could answer that, yeah, it's been college really helps. But then some aspect of it, I don't think really what college you go to, just the experience really matters in becoming an entrepreneur.
Yeah. No, that's so true. And I was curious too. So obviously your 10 years in Wall Street, I mean, obviously that, you know, there's certain aspects of that that help prepare you for what you're doing now. Like you said, whether it's dealing with those types of people or seeing them as equal, them seeing you as an equal is and applying that to your, you know, business today. So anything else that you learned from that you apply today, but then also, you know, tell us about that decision to leave Wall Street and basically go out on your own as an entrepreneur, or where the,
yeah,
where that started from.
So a couple of things I noticed a difference is when I look at our team versus other teams. When we talk with big corporations or we talk with big clients, we don't get intimidated because, you know, we have experience working with having conversations with C-level guys. And I used to invest in companies that were $10 billion and met with the CEOs, met with the CFOs, and asked them really hard questions about what makes their business work, what doesn't work, why is the business performing this way or underperforming. It was really tough one-hour questions. And I needed to take that back to invest in those companies for my clients. So, you know, over the years, I just had certain confidence about it. And so when we go and have conversations with our partners, you know, I feel confident that, hey, first, I'm going to prepare myself to have a good conversations with them. I'm going to understand what their needs are. And third, I'm going to make sure that the deal that we work with these, with our partners, is the right deal for not just for them, but also for us. And if it's not a good deal for us, we're willing to step away because I have enough experience to understand that. And that was what's really important about the work I did back then. You know, there are some other things that we do. I build pitch decks to market our company to, you know, potentially grocery stores, to universities that we talk to. I have a pitch deck to talk to our investors about. Those are things I would not have been able to do if I didn't go to college and worked on Wall Street. But, you know, there are people who could do that for you right now. But I think those were probably the most valuable skill sets I learned versus not being able to go if I didn't go to college. Hmm.
And then tell us about kind of that decision to, you know, leave Wall Street, leave the comfort of that,
yeah,
you know, income to start off on your own.
Yeah. So, When I left Wall Street was, I think it was 2019 during COVID. So we had a transition within our company. So there was our investment team had an option. Well, our investment team was shutting down. And, you know, I had an option to go work for another company, got another job offer. And I was telling myself, you know, maybe this is a change I need to have because I know what Wall Street provides. I know working in investment, it was probably one of the best jobs I ever had. But I thought I could do a little bit more with working on my own. The other thing was I didn't feel like I was making enough impact, and I didn't feel like that I had control over what I wanted to do. And being an entrepreneur and starting on your own could provide that. The other thing that was really interesting was that why I decided to leave was there was an opportunity to come back to Jacksonville, also work with my brother in his company to do some really interesting things. And, you know, working with my brother, you know, some people say don't work with your family or friends. The haymaker, it's brother, friend and wife in that company. You know, it's been a great experience to do that. So that was a lifetime opportunity. So I left Wall Street to do this and you know, there are some challenging times I look back on it, but I think overall it's been a really great experience.
And before we dive into Haymaker, because we want to spend a good chunk of time talking about that business and the culture behind it, especially really fascinates me. But fill us in now, 2020, not to mention, you know, COVID coming in and all that shebang going on, but 2020 into 2021, tell us more about that transition period. What were the businesses you were working on? What was the scope? And then leading into, you know, the day that, boom, you know, you caught a literal haymaker telling you to start this company.
When I left Wall Street, I started a company called Iridescent and Partners. So basically, while I was working at my previous firm, I was an investment manager managing an international small cap and an emerging markets small cap fund. And basically, you know, if you have a 401k, the mutual funds, if you invest in that, I was the guy who was actually putting the stocks in the portfolio, picking them. So doing that, I gained some knowledge about investing. But then I had a great opportunity to work with my C-level management at my last firm to do corporate strategy, to look at M&A opportunities. And we also worked on a small team to do IPO. So I had experience in working with investment bankers, understand all the things that need to go in to take a company from private to public and go on the NASDAQ and ring the bell. So it's like, well, I have all this great knowledge and experience. When I tried to build a company from it, so Iridescent Partner was just formed to provide small business advisory and consulting services to businesses who are looking to grow their business, or they're like, I'm at a stage right now, I'm ready to exit, I don't know anything about it. Well, look, you can hire Iridescent Partners to help you with that. So started that LLC, had a couple of clients, they were really happy with what I did. And also on the side, worked with my brother at his company called Rounded for M&A and also corporate transactions. So with his company, I helped with growth strategies. Again, we did two transactions there where we acquired two small companies. We're building a strategic initiatives to go into government business and so on. So that's what I did prior to Haymaker.
Mm. And then tell us about the Haymaker story. You know, you're tied in with this business, like you mentioned, with a number of co-founders. Who came up with it? Who brought it to the table? How did that whole scenario break down where you were just like, hey, we're a bunch of finance guys. We're going to start a company, a coffee company.
Yeah. Though. Okay. So that's a really interesting story. So Rounded is a defense firearm accessories company. So the company manufactures holster out of Jacksonville, Florida. And so, you know, our customers are D2C customers, which is we have a website, sell to them directly. And what we did was strategically, we made a move into go into wholesale business, which now we have approximately 1,500 stores. We work with Academy. We work with some of the big boxes, and we also have government as our customers. So that's the business. And what ended up happening during COVID, we realized, hey, there's a great opportunity for the business to get new customers because the larger corporations were restricted in traveling and they had a lot of restrictions on how they do business. But as a small business, we're like, hey, this could be a great opportunity to go visit your dealers and try to build up this business that way. So we're going out talking with businesses, gaining new accounts and so on. And what ended up happening, went to some of these stores and it starts to see this coffee company in these stores. I'm like, huh, this is kind of interesting. Why are they selling coffee in sports stores or firearm accessory stores and so on? Not in the traditional like grocery stores and, you know, like those bodegas and so on. And more, you'll see the same company over and over again. That company was Black Rifle Coffee. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, that's an interesting business. So what we, during that time, was reading this book called Blue Ocean Strategy. And it basically tells you, like, how do these companies create this new, new marketplaces, or how do they kind of make their competitors or find new places where the competition doesn't exist. And what Black Rifle did was they created this brand, amazing company. It's a veteran-owned company where they positioned their brand. And back then it was very political. You were either on the left or the right. And there were many companies in the middle. And they were in the premium mass conservative market. And in that market, they totally dominated. So when we looked at the top 10 coffee companies, coffee brands, you know, most of them were like either in the center left or left. And there's like the mass market, which is the more affordable coffees up to premium, which is the more expensive coffees. And they occupied, if you break it into a matrix, they just occupied it on the left side of this. And on the right side, just Black Rifle dominates. So we're like, maybe there's an opportunity to be in there. And then we started to like, maybe we can copy Black Rifle. But we realized quickly, we're not them. We're not veterans. You know, we don't have those views that they have. And what we were that we're a company, we're people in the middle that we, you know, sometimes there are issues that we would lean to the left. There are some issues that we'll lean to the right. But generally speaking, we're in the middle where majority of the Americans are. And so I brought this up to my brother. Like, hey, do you think there's an opportunity for us to do this? And it's like, oh, this is actually not a bad idea. And then we also approach my seventh grade friend from Jacksonville. Hey, Simon, would you be interested in doing this too? And we're like, yeah, why don't we start this? So we started this whole process, do some more research and so on. And we're like, yeah, there's an opportunity there. So we And it was 2021 when we founded the company, but it was actually 2020 when we came up with the idea of it. Mm. And, you know, and Haymaker is now in his third year of the business. Mm.
Yeah, the riches are in the niches, right? That was one of the things that we used to always say. But yeah, so, okay, tell us about the name and the logo and kind of where you feel like your target market customer is and what you guys kind of identified with that.
Yeah, so what we realized early was we're not going to be the coffee brand for everyone. And we need to be true to who we are. So what we are, the three other founders is myself, my brother, and my friend from school. He's a second generation, but his parents immigrated from Lebanon. And so he's an immigrant as well. It just happened that his parents and our parents own gas stations and they all believed in the American dream. And we're like, hey, that's our messaging. Let's go with that. And so how do we design a brand, a logo that represents and the name of the company that represents that? So we went through, we were working with a marketing firm, went through various names and designs, and we landed on Haymaker. And we like, wow, this is it. This is what we are. And people ask, why did you pick that? Well, if you go to the shelves in the grocery store and look at all of the different coffee companies there, they have very nice looking brands. It's very like colorful. It's pretty to look at, you know. And if you look at our brand, like if you guys have a chance to go look at us on haymakercoffeeco.com, the board comes out and it shows a lot of like where it shows a lot of grit. It shows a lot of perseverance because, you know, when you start a business and also the people that we want to attract, it's tough to be out there. And we wanted that to represent that. And they're like, why did you pick Haymaker? Well, you know, sometimes if you want to go after the big dogs, you got to throw some Haymakers. So we have this logo with the boar, with the boxing gloves to represent who we are as a company, but also the people that we want to serve our coffee to represent their journey they're going through. And, you know, initially when we came out, people are like, oh, I don't get it. Then like, people are like, oh, I see you guys. I see how hard you guys work. And I see how you guys message into this. Now people, it really resonates with the folks. Look, I'm not going to get the 20 or the 30% that wants a very pretty brand or doesn't believe in the American dream. But they, I think the 70-80% of the folks that believes in that, it really resonates with those guys.
Yeah. And I think one thing that you kind of beat people to in this process that obviously like Black Rifle did very well too, is something I've seen, even leading into 2023, might've been the first time I saw it, is like advice for small businesses in 2023 was it's better to, have an opinion and stand by it than to have no opinion at all. That's right. Like you should take something and outline it and then showcase that to your consumers. And people are now like buying into that more so than ever.
Yeah. No, you hit it the nail on the head. And I'll tell you what. So there are a lot of copycats of Black Rifle. And again, it's a matter of execution. But again, if you copycat another brand and that's not true to who you are, consumers are smart. They're going to figure that out, right? And they're going to be like, oh, you guys are just copycatting Black Rifle. You can't match the guy who's been a veteran. He hires a lot of veterans, which, again, great company. I love what they're doing. You know, but if you're not exactly what that is and you're not authentic with that and you don't come off being genuine, you're never going to get the consumers because consumers are smart. So, you know, when we talk about our brand, it's like, I haven't told you how great our coffee is because, again, that's secondary. When you talk about your brand, people got to believe that that when you talk about the brand and you represent it, the folks who run the company or folks who are part of it is what representative of that. So when you look at me and you saw me a couple of times at Jackson University and also at the co-working space, like, man, that guy, like, I know he's hardworking and I know that he's, you know, doing whatever he can. And the folks that are part of his team, they're doing the same thing. That is the brand. And that's why I think we're successful right now because people really believe in us. Mm.
I wanted to ask too. Okay. So, I mean, obviously between the inception of the business and where you guys are now, I mean, obviously you guys supply coffee at, you know, JU, you just recently got into Clemson University. You know, we were at the Iceman hockey game and I see Haymaker everywhere. So obviously you've gotten the product out there, you know, quickly. I mean, I would consider it for, you know, a relatively new business, just a few years old. I mean, so tell, you know, share with us kind of for other entrepreneurs out there that have this idea, that have, you know, kind of the conviction behind it, you know, what were some steps that you took to kind of help unlock that next level for you?
Great question. So, a lot of preparation, a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of sacrificing with the family. I have two small kids, and the only time they see me is when I help my wife to take them to school, and they see me at late at night on my phone, on my computer, just typing away and so on. First, you got to be willing to make those sacrifices. I mean, just like running a small business doesn't work unless you're willing to make that sacrifice. And, you know, Elon Musk, he's like, if you listen to things he says, not his like personal beliefs, just the way he works. There's a comedy. There's a quote of him saying he sleeps on the manufacturing floor because he needs to be there 100 hours a week. I mean, who is willing to make that 100 hour a week commitment and sacrifice? There are not many people to do that. And I think the part of the reason why we've been so successful is we're willing to make that commitment. I'm not working 100 hours a week, but, you know, I have a full-time job. I'm doing this on the side, and my partners are doing the same thing. You know, my wife who works for the company, she's doing the same thing, and our team who's doing the same thing. You know, they're working their asses off. So that was a big part of it. So willing to make that sacrifice. Also, you need to have a really good strategy and figure out where do you want to be? What is the outcome that you're achieving, that you want to achieve? And what is the journey that you want to get there? So, you know, we had to pivot a couple times. You know, we started out as an e-commerce company because that's what COVID presented itself as. Then we pivoted into coffee trucks. We have two coffee trucks running around Jacksonville. And, you know, we learned that, hey, we can position ourselves this way, talk about the brand this way. This resonates, this doesn't resonate. Hey, here's our coffee. Here's what works. It doesn't work. Get all of that information. It's like, okay, now we're ready to go with the big dogs and go after some of these really great accounts that's willing to have a long-term partnership with you and approach those in a very strategic, but very, measured approach in a way that it would resonate with those guys. I think one of the big things going to be in our future is the collision accounts. You know, it was because of our great partnership with Jacksonville University helped us learn a lot of these different things. Aramark is the partner we work with, taught us a lot of different things to approach the business and go after a tremendous account like Clemson University. So I think being willing to make that sacrifice, have a strategic plan, being able to pivot where things are working, not working, and then having a measured approach to talk to these customers is the reason why we're here. Mm.
And talking about sacrifice, I was brainstorming for this episode. I was reflecting on another podcast we did with an entrepreneur, first generation immigrant from Iran here in Jacksonville, runs private practice medical offices. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I asked him about is that consistent grind, right? Like he graduated high school at 15, was out of his first degree from UNF by 19, you know, medical school, opening private practices, all these things. And another thing I saw recently is talking about how good entrepreneurs, they move, right? No entrepreneur is stagnant, and kind of the way you are in that, mm-hmm. in the sense of the early stages of the company. And what I want to ask you about, I asked Saman, the other entrepreneur, the same question is, what was your fallback during these times? Like when you don't want to be moving and when you're pivoting and you know, through your time in finance, through launching your company, what has kind of been your cornerstone to stay moving, stay active, and be willing to make those sacrifices?
So I talk about my experience working in Wall Street, which has been tremendous to help me understand and have some confidence in talking with certain people. But in terms of running a business, you know, there are some business model things I picked up on, but there are a lot of things I had to learn brand new, right? So I'm a monthly subscriber to Audible and I listen to audiobooks all the time. And, you know, just that is my, like, my addiction is audiobooks, learning about what entrepreneurs did. And, you know, what's great, actually, we actually know Saman. One of the things he told us, hey, if you had to pay up a little bit to not make the same mistakes or not make stupid mistakes, do it because it's going to be more costly later. It's like, great. That's a great advice. Let me read all these books about entrepreneurships and see what are some of the problems and faults they went through. And I don't want to repeat those things because those things could really take me out of business. So what I've been leaning on is reading a lot of books, listening to a lot of messages, listen to podcasts on folks who made it happen, but also kind of understand the struggle that happens from like when your business is nothing to getting some traction, getting traction to getting stability, stability to getting prosperity, and prosperity to eventually exiting. Just trying to understand all these different paths that people take and listen to what are they're going through. So when I encounter those things, which we do encounter, we have some really great highs and really bad lows. So I can learn from their lessons, like, okay, so when I feel this way, when I feel bad about this certain circumstances, this is what they did. And I'm like, okay, this is what I need to do going forward. Or if not, I'll call my friends in New York or talk to some of my mentors and say, hey, what do I need to do here? Like, I'm struggling here. Like, I'm having cash flow issues. Like, or meet with some of their business leaders in Jacksonville who have been very gracious with their time, giving me some advice. And those are the things I really lean into. This one's going to sound cliche, is that also I have two little boys and I also have a wife and my parents live here. One thing I'm not going to teach them is failure. So whatever needs to be get done, and I don't care how bad I feel about certain things or how tired I am, I am not going to lose here. So I also look at my kids and I also look at my family and my wife and say, nope, don't feel sorry for yourself. It doesn't matter how tired you are. You're just going to have to push through and you're smart enough to figure this out. So that's what's been driving us going forward.
Yeah, I can imagine you and Saman in the same room would be quite a powerhouse. Like, he was the same way you are right now, of just like the, like, you can feel the passion, like even earlier compared to when you were kind of telling your own story to now like sharing all your insight with what's going on. I mean, his episode was one of my favorites we've had the chance to do. I can only imagine like, the two of you in the same room with your backgrounds, your work ethics.
Saman is a really good friend of my business partner, Simon. So, you know, I had a chance to meet with Saman, and again, he's done some amazing things with his business, and he gave us some really good nuggets to kind of think about and help us go through this whole process. But there's so much to learn from listening to other folks. Like, you know, again, you know, you learn from your mistakes, but there's some mistakes you shouldn't experience because it could be catastrophic in terms of your business not working or just becoming a total failure, right? So I think, you know, building a great network and understanding folks who went through this whole process, it's really good to speak with them on that. The other thing, which has been good, which you just alluded to, you know, having that circle of friends or having that circle of network that understands or share the same passion that you have for your business or your family or other things that are of your interest, it really helps you to move forward.
Yeah, what you said about reading and listening to Audibles, I'm the same way. I'm actually was just reading Think Again by Adam Grant, which is phenomenal. It talks about the story about the guy that started BlackBerry and how he really dug into, you know, his he wasn't willing to evolve with you know, what was happening in front of him. And I think reading and learning from other people's mistakes and helping, just anything that can kind of help spark that new idea. Cause I know, especially as an entrepreneur, it's like, it's easy to get stuck, right? You hit a point where it's like, okay, well, maybe you hit a wall or this relationship didn't work out and you feel, but there's certain points along the way where you kind of figure things out. You know, you talk about the food truck, which I think is brilliant because it's like, you're not committing to one location. You can move around, you can go where the business is. And then, you know, you talk about your decision where you feel like for you, universities is the place that you want to go. So is there anything additionally around kind of those, are you building like rituals or routines where you guys are strategic in your thinking and figuring out, okay, when you hit a wall, you know, I see you've got a Moleskine, obviously you're reading, you've got, you know, great mentors, but anything else as a company that you feel like you guys do when you hit those problems that you can quickly figure out what to do next and pivot and move?
Yeah. I'll tell you a real example. When we started out as e-commerce, you know, people were telling us, you know, there's this great opportunity to build your brand and become this next big e-commerce company. You know, from some of these e-commerce companies, they're hurting right now because it's so expensive now to advertise on Google, Facebook, Instagram, and so on. And what happened to us, we're going down the same path too. And we're like, oh, let's spend some money on this. And holy crap, that was a very expensive mistake. And our bank account was going down and we're like, something's not working here. Like, but you know, some, couple of the partners that we were working with, like, oh, continue to throw more money. Like, and we're like thinking, this is stupid. This is stupid. We're going to run out of money. And you know, we're not even 6 months into this business and we're going to be out of money and we're going to become a failure. So what happened in that instance, because we were in a bad path, for like, we called a bunch of people, like people who are experienced in marketing or folks who did e-commerce, and like, hey, what are we doing wrong here? And there was this one person, give a shout out to this woman. If she's ever going to listen to this, her name's Kay. She's like, you guys need to stop with this whole national marketing and you guys should just focus on local. And we're like, oh, wow. That seemed like a very simple concept. Like, what is it? It's like, you guys are from Jacksonville. You guys are passionate about Jacksonville. You care about people here. Like, you know, build on that. Build on that. Build that partnership with great businesses, nonprofits. We work with nonprofits here too. Build on that. And then people will see your brand and people will see what you guys are doing. And then people will resonate with that. And that pivot was what saved us. Hmm. I mean, literally what saved us. You know, we were spending $10,000 a month to get $1,000 in sale. Terrible, terrible return on investment there, right? And it wasn't getting better. And so that whole thing, we pivoted, listened to someone who's like, hey, this is the wrong way, literally saved our life. Mm-hmm. And I think whenever an entrepreneur or a business person or just anyone in life just dealing with situations or issues that you have trouble understanding or figuring out a solution, you got to ask folks. People are willing to help. Like if you ask someone in a nice way, hey, I'm having these problems. I need some help. Most people are very generous about their time and they're even more generous about helping you solving problems. And we learned that really early that you can ask people for help. And that's what's been really helping us save us.
I love that. And you know, you're just talking about, and I feel like the key there too is, you know, when you get that advice, you have to be willing to accept it, right? Yeah. I think a lot of times as entrepreneurs, you kind of get stuck in this, like everything you do, you feel like is right, but then you have to stay adaptable. And I think being able to hear good advice and accept it. And one of the things you said earlier, it was a small thing, but it, to me, being a successful entrepreneur is all about mentality. You know, when I asked about a certain account, I said, do you guys work with them? You said, not yet. Right. And I just, you know, just that little piece of belief in knowing that, hey, we may not have it yet, but we're working towards it. And I think, you know, letting that, you know, kind of sink in, and obviously is part of, you know, part of y'all's culture of like, hey, we're going to figure it out, and just having that mentality.
Brian, that's a really good point. A couple things on that is, you know, where I was with my job in New York, I was probably at the pinnacle of it or close to being pinnacle. Like, I mean, I don't know how big my head was. I'm physically, it's already big. My wife tells me like how big it is. And the hats, when I try to put it on, it's too small to fit on my head. I came in here to the entrepreneur world thinking I knew everything. And damn, I was so wrong about it. And I had to make that adjustment to become humble. And I think anyone who gets into the, to become an entrepreneur, you gotta be willing to learn. And you gotta accept the fact that you don't know what you're getting yourself into. So you just have to be like sponge and just absorb. You know, granted, there's a lot of trash advice people give you too, like, but take it in because they're willing to skip some time, but you could throw it out later, but you got to just be willing to absorb. The second thing was, you know, we have very positive attitude in our company. You know, if someone has done it or another business have done it, and they have that account or they're in this particular place or in a situation, I'm like, why we could figure this out. Why can't we? Like, we're smart people. We have the right resource. And if I don't have the people in place, we're going to find the right people. And, you know, this is not being like just ignorant, positive attitude stuff. It's like, no, you got to really believe that you could figure this stuff out. And I think if you have the grit and you have the perseverance, anybody can figure stuff out. Now, do you have the perseverance to willing to work at it to figure it out? That's a different story. But, you know, the thing that we're in, you know, we're selling a commodity. We're selling a coffee. Caffeine it you know, gives people alert, gives certain pleasures because it's a great drink to have. It's tasty and so on. But, you know, we're at the end of the day, we're selling a product, right? And selling a product, it's like selling yourself. Like, you know, you guys invited me to be here because you're like, hey, you know, maybe I will be a good someone to speak on a podcast. You know, I had to sell myself, whether it was directly or indirectly, I had to sell myself. And, you know, what we're doing with this coffee product, we're selling the product to whether it's a small grocery store that we have a really great relationship in Avondale or to a large university. We have to go continue to sell ourselves. And I think that selling stuff, you can figure it out. Mm.
So we just talked about a number of different things from, you know, mindset to communication, networking, branding. You have a ton of experience, especially from your time in finance with strategy and working with high level clients. I wanted to ask you, because one thing that Brian really introduced me to as a young entrepreneur is like, really, it's all about acquiring skills, whether it's like a hard skill or like a soft skill. But I wanted to ask you, what do you believe your biggest strength has become? How did you develop it? And then how has that helped you really develop this company?
Yeah. I think the biggest strength I've developed is being patient and working with our team. I mean, we have an amazing team here. You know, I'll start with our partners, you know, like my business partner and my friend from school. You know, that guy has a relentless work ethic. I mean, what we had to go through to get approved on Cisco, to get Clemson to order through Cisco. I mean, it would have probably taken like, I don't know, like 15 people to do it. He did it by himself in 1 week. I'm like, and I can't believe we got that done. And he's amazing that way. My brother, you know, he, like myself, worked in a large corporation. He worked for a private equity company, which he ended up becoming operations for oil field services. Now he runs his own business. I mean, he has amazing people skills, like to get folks interested in our company and to potentially get us business through that. But he also just have a knack for understanding for people. My wife, who's in branding, like, man, like she sees perspectives and she sees things that I can't see. It's blind spots. I mean, that's what your spouse is supposed to do for you. And, you know, she's willing to tell me, which is, I mean, I really appreciate her of it. But, and then we have Cody, which is our coffee truck manager. I mean, he manages all of the operation. And, you know, again, he's an amazing person because he was the executive chef at Cooper's Hawk. I mean, he was the top person there. He left to go work with us at a startup. I mean, it's not, at this point, it's not probably a position that everyone would be like, oh, wow, you went from executive chef to running coffee jars. But, you know, he's been invaluable bringing his, like, processes in place and just working really hard to build that business up. So we have a great team. And I think that's been what it is. Like, you know, as a leader, as a person, like, you know, you think you know it all and you think you need to be the person who has to shout all the time or be the one that always provides strategy. No, it's like taking your team, getting feedback from the team and understanding where everyone's strengths are and utilizing those strengths to help the business grow. And I think we have a tremendous team. I would put our team against any team and I think we would do really well. Mm.
Well, I've got one more question and I'll kick it back over to Colby. But one of the things I wanted to ask too is anything that you guys are looking for to kind of help take you to that next level of what you want to do and anything that you, you know, is a goal of the company, just putting it out there in terms of just what's on the horizon for you guys.
That's a tough one to say because last year, if you asked me that question, I would have said something different. And the year before, I would have said something different. And what I've also realized by running this business is that our goals and what we're looking for changed depending on where we go and which part of the business grows the fastest. You know, the big difference between a small business and a large business is that large businesses are very stable. So you can forecast, you can budget things, and you can anticipate things. Small business, you can have a large account, and that could be transformative in terms of how your cash flow is going to be managed, how you budget, what direction you want to take. You know, it wasn't until recently, like, we're like, wow, this College Avenue could be a really interesting avenue because, you know, maybe I shouldn't be saying this, like, other coffee companies are not looking at this. And, you know, if you bring a good value, a reason to work to these universities, reason to work with you, why the brand would resonate with the students and what could it potentially become, there's a lot of opportunity there. And so I think right now is that what we want folks to understand is like, we're great people to work with. Because we're small, we're very nimble. We can do a lot of different things that a large company can't do. But you know, if there's a way for folks to get our brand out there and talk about, man, like, heard this podcast, Haymaker Coffee, love what this guy was saying about the branding, why he's doing it, what the brand stands for. And if we get that word out there, I think that could be tremendous because we may get into another opportunity that we didn't expect that could be potentially interesting as the college opportunity.
Hmm. Well, and what's great about getting in with a college student is, hey, they like your coffee now, they're probably going to start drinking it with their first job, and you know what I mean? And have it in their house. So you're kind of getting in at kind of the right age where they're starting to, you know, drink coffee more often.
Yeah. That's exactly what we're thinking.
I want to ask, do you do espresso grounds too, or just like traditional coffee?
When we started out, we only did a medium and a dark roast. Now we have espresso, we have flavored coffees. I mean, one of the best sellers we have right now is our bourbon barrel aged coffee. I don't know if you ever tried bourbon barrel aged coffee. So what we do is we basically buy bourbon barrels. We take our raw green beans, put it in the barrels. We age it for approximately 2 weeks. When it comes out, the walls are still wet. So the beans soak up the bourbon.
Wow.
And when you do a small batch roast, it burns all the alcohol off, but you get all of the great aroma of and the flavor of bourbon in your coffee. And we're like, oh, this could be a little gimmick. It's one of our best sellers.
Wow.
Yeah. And what's great about that, it's a premium product. There's a lot of manual labor that has to go into it, and it costs money. Like, the barrels cost like $300, and shipping is like another $200-$300. It's expensive. But when you see your customers enjoying that, and we've been out for about a month or so, and customers continue to ask for it, you know that's a good hit product.
Yeah, that's
great. Well, this has been an absolute blast. I mean, I'm so glad we can make this work. I think we met upwards of a year ago now when we first started this conversation about getting you on. I'm honestly glad that we took the time to make this happen, because so much just, I mean, month to month, like, so much happens. That's happened, you know, with us the last few years at Grit, and now with Haymaker and what you're doing. Like, so much happens on month to month basis. So I'm glad we could make it happen now. Timing was perfect. One thing we talked about before we started the show is our Grit Creed. And as I told you, the Grit Creed's 12 principles that really the company is built on. So I wanted to ask you, looking at the Grit Creed in front of you now, which part resonates most with you and why?
You know, they're amazing. All of them are amazing. I think the one that resonates the most with me is, I will lead by example because my purpose is larger than me. And I think that, you know, that is the one that resonates with me, because I try to live by that example every day. Because, you know, I have a company that I run with my partners. I have to set the example with our team. But I'm also a father and a husband, and I'm trying to set a good example for my kids. So this is it. And I think you guys have an amazing, amazing podcast. I love what you guys are doing. And we were talking before we got on the Grit thing. Man, that's our thing. Mm. So I'm glad we were able to do this.
Yeah, perfect collaboration. We're going to have to make some more stuff happen in the future, I think. Yeah. I mean, because I was looking at the site again, just doing some due diligence before the show. And yeah, I mean, you know, for me, this is like our 40th episode, I think, about that we've done. And this has been like a college education, you know, to talk to guys like you or Saman. There are so many incredible people out there. And I think for me as a young person, whether I was listening to this podcast or getting the opportunity to host it, doesn't really matter. But it's really what makes you know, for me, it's what keeps the world going around for sure. Like to be able to learn from other people. And so collaboration, things like that, like hopefully we can make more work between Haymaker and Grit in the future.
Oh, I love this. I think that this is good for us to continue to talk. And again, you know, what we're doing is not a secret. We love to talk about it. And I think what you guys are doing is fantastic. And like you said, you know, people need to hear examples of what people are doing to mm-hmm. figure things out, because sometimes you may not have the network or resources. Mm-hmm. So this is a great way to do it.
One, thank you again for coming on today.
Yeah,
really appreciate it. And haymaker.com or haymakercoffee.com?
It's haymakercoffeeco.com. So with the haymakercoffeeco.com.
Cool. Perfect. All right. Well, now you've heard from the man himself. Can visit their website, find them on Amazon as well as in Target. We didn't really have a chance to talk about that, but in Target as well.
Target.com.
Yeah. Be sure to follow them on Instagram. Stay in touch. Try the coffee. We're excited. We've been drinking it for a while now as well. Definitely recommend it. So thank you for tuning in. That's a wrap here today at the Grit.org podcast. Share this with someone you think it would resonate with or impact. As always, we appreciate you tuning in.